And now live from Connie's Cross Keys Inn, the Joan Stack Show, brought to you in part each day by Nicholas Appliances, where Maine meets Union, Gwynedd Mercy College, and the Medical Center for Aging at Doylestown.
Hi, this is Joan Stack. Well, I'm delighted to have my guest today, Maggie Root, who is also Margaret Mullen, one of the few guests I've worked to completely different names.
No.
We're going to be talking about both sides of Maggie Root. Margaret Mullen is your stage name.
Yes, and I don't think many people around here, Joan, really know that that my name was Margaret Mullen. I mean, people don't know that. They just think I'm Maggie Root.
Yeah.
You do.
Work that you do now in the area that is indirectly connected with your stage work, though, is under the Maggie Root name. The poetry readings.
Yes, yes.
And, yes.
Always Maggie Root.
Yeah. Well, we're going to hear some more about this story and how it came to be Maggie Root in Bucks County, which I'm very anxious to have you share with listeners because it's got everything. It's got glamour. It's got Broadway. It's got excitement. It's got John Root involved in it.
Oh,
it
got him. All right.
Yeah. And it had one of those things. We probably could make a musical out of this if
it's just pretty funny.
Get our wits about us. On one of the things that you and I were talking about before we went on, there was a newspaper article about you in which it said you had appeared in 40 Broadway productions.
Gross exaggeration.
Yeah, I bet you could have used the money for 40
or the experience of doing it.
Yeah. But there were 20 Broadway productions.
That's right. I looked myself up after that in the New York Times theater directory, and I counted them, and there were 20, and there weren't 40. But I thought, well, nobody around here, if they think I've done 40, that's just great.
Yeah. What were some of the highlights, the ones I know?
Well, I think the big hits were that I was in. The big hit was Dead End and Room Service, Three Men and a Horse, State of the Union, which won the Pulitzer Prize.
Oh.
And I was in Time of Your Life. I told you about that the last time with William Saroyan.
Oh.
But I was fired from that.
Oh, you
were? I was fired, yes. I mean, he came, I think I told you about that, so I don't want to repeat it.
Oh.
I mean, it was rather sad to be fired. The Theater Guild produced it, and the next thing I knew, I came to the theater. I used to get a applause on my exit every single night. And Saroyan came to see the play and really was so upset about the way it was being interpreted. He just didn't like the director's interpretation, and they fired 11 people out of the cast.
Oh.
But they hadn't fired me, and I was playing in my hometown in Boston. I came to the theater one night, walked up to my dressing room, which was about 3 flights up from the stage, and there was another girl sitting in my seat with my makeup ready to go on in my part. And
didn't tell me that story.
Oh, I didn't. Well, that just popped into my mind now.
Oh.
That was terrible. I thought I was going to jump right off the balcony and down. I don't know why they did it. Then afterwards, I had walked right past the stage manager, right past him, and he never said anything. You know, these were kind of the cruel, terrible things that can happen.
Recently, William Saroyan died.
He died.
And yes.
Oh, gosh, he died.
He died. Unlamented by some of us.
No, no. You know, I know you've got other things to talk about, but I really want to say this, because he was right about every change he made. And when I went to see the play in New York, this was not, remember, a tryout. I went to see it, and I realized that he was absolutely right. He changed the scenery, changed the director, changed all of these actors, and he knew that the way we were doing it was really way away from the simplicity that he had originally thought of when he had conceived that play.
Famous, just to do a little backdrop, it's a famous play in which takes place almost entirely, not in a saloon.
In a barroom.
Yeah.
Eddie Downing was in it, and Julie Hayden was in it. Remember Julie Hayden?
I sure do.
Well, those people stayed.
Yeah.
Those two stayed. Everybody else, out.
how remarkable of you to have been able to see that he was right. I'm thinking, especially a young person, you would be so bitter, so furious. I was amazed you even when you said you even went to the show. I think I would have wanted to boycott it.
Well, I tell you what happened. I was happily married. I was pregnant with my daughter, Linda, at the time, even at the time that I was in the play. And I thought, oh, just one more chance. And there was something about the other aspects of life that were so satisfying to me that I really began to get a perspective on where that hurt was and all the other things that were really happening in my life that were very good.
Oh, and how wise of you to view it that way. I had a psychiatrist on the program yesterday who was just talking about this is certainly off the subject, but so appropriate, about how people get depressed. And he said it's often triggered by a chemical reaction, but he said it has to do with the other things that are going on in their life at the time, whether this means a real depression or a real period of terrible hostility.
Yes.
And anger.
Yes.
And you see, you were able to forget the crushing blow because you had these other good things
Something
to focus
really
on.
Something really was happening that was outside of myself, you know.
Yeah.
So you see, I remember crying and sobbing when it happened. Oh, my Lord. I mean, I really experienced without, now they keep saying, if you don't experience these things that really hurt, then you're still holding on to them. Well, I really did just sob and carry on, and, you know, I think I got a lot of it out that way, too.
Yeah. Oh, but it must be such a terrible blow, because the work that of the theater is very intense work anyway, and they're very sensitive, imaginative people who do it, or they wouldn't be in the theater.
That's right.
And so it then has got to hurt four times as much. Yeah. Well, Maggie Root, Margaret Mullen, is my guest today, and we'll be talking about her life in just 1 minute. Before we do that, I want to tell you about Mainly Cuts and Colors. This is not the day to talk about hair, because I think most people are going around with, not Margaret Mullen, she looks gorgeous, but most of us are going around with the droops and the drips. If you have a good cut, even weather like this, means you're going to turn out in pretty decent fashion, because you can always give it a quick wash and a comb out and come out looking decent anyway, if not absolutely smashing. Mainly Cuts and Colors is the place to go for that good cut. They really know what they're about. And when you go in there, tell them what your particular needs are, your particular problems. If your hair has been damaged by sun or by chlorine, many of us love to swim in pools without any bathing hats at all. Well, it feels good at the time, but it's really not the best thing for your hair. Give them a call and tell them if you're having these problems, even if you're not having problems, if you just want to look good, give them a call. Get an appointment. Men, women, and children, everybody comes out just fine. They're at 152 West State Street, right in the middle of Doylestown there. The number to call is 345-0722. They're open Tuesday through Saturday, but they're open late on Wednesday and Thursday nights. Incidentally, they know all about permanents, too, and how to take care of them during the summer. They will show you how to keep whatever your hairstyle is looking good between appointments. They claim this is their best advertisement. Is if you look good, they look good. Mainly Cuts and Colors is their name. Maggie Root is my guest, and we're talking about her career as an actress, and we want to do this as part two because we had such a good time talking about the early days and traveling with your mother when you first started out in the theater. But eventually you sure made it. You were in 20 shows on Broadway eventually, and then came to Bucks County.
That's right. I met,
yeah,
John Root, who was in he was the scenic designer of a play called Red Harvest that I was in. And he did this marvelous scene of a cathedral. It was transferred into a hospital during during the First World War. And I was talking with psychiatry. I was a nurse that was just so overwhelmed by these terrible, terrible wounded soldiers that I had really kind of gone off my rocker, or over the bend, as they say.
Mm-hmm.
Now. And You know, somebody just came and tapped me on the shoulder.
Yes,
you know who that is.
Yes, I did. Well, you see, you have fans all over.
Oh, gosh. Well, where was I?
You were in the hospital.
Oh, yes. And John Root kept asking people in the cast and the producers if they would please introduce us. And then when we finally did meet and marry, all these friends would come up to us, and the director and the other people in the cast, and say, you know, I introduced you to John Root.
Oh.
Did you know that? And of course, he had everybody doing it. But the funny thing was that one night when I was supposed to be looking at all these sort of basket cases, these poor soldiers, and they were dragging them in front of me, and John went and got himself all bloodied up, put bandages around his head, and he had them bring him out on a stretcher. That was, you know, that you couldn't resist that.
Oh.
Anybody that would do that, right in the stage when you're supposed to be practically having hysterics, feeling so terrible, you know, and to have this man come, and then, of course, my hysterics turned to one of those wonderful things, laughing and crying at the same time, and then I thought, I'll never forgive him for this.
Oh, so did you want him to appear every night in his bloody bandages?
Oh, God, that was the end. The end.
Oh, is it?
But we finally, we were married 6 weeks later. I mean, he just told people that we were going, I told somebody that I was really going with at the time, a gentleman that I was very fond of, and I said to him, you know, I'm going to marry John Root. Because he had never asked me. He had never asked me, and John was telling other people that he was going to marry me. Now, before I left today, John said, don't tell any family secrets. And here I am.
Yes, John, we told it.
I've told that.
Oh, that's a marvelous story.
Isn't that fun? Yeah.
Well, how did you happen to come to Bucks County? You were preparing a play.
That's right. Well, I was rehearsing in room service when we were just getting married. I mean, I was rehearsing in room service, and actually we got married when I was in room service. And we came down here, and I'll tell you, just a few weeks before that, John and I loved to come to Bucks County, loved to come to Lancaster, and he wanted to sort of show me. He had a marvelous little old Ford convertible. And so we would drive around the countryside and the few days that we had off, and then we went to the Doylestown Inn, I remember.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we finally did get married, we had our wedding breakfast over at the Catalasa Inn, that beautiful place, you know. The waterfall. Too bad we didn't have it right here at Conti's, but that's...
right. They don't have a waterfall.
They don't have a waterfall. I forget what I was going to tell you. Oh.
Well, I want... deciding to be married in Doylestown.
We got married in Doylestown. I don't know why we decided to get married in Doylestown. I hope it's all right to tell you that both John and I were not practicing Catholics.
Mm-hmm.
And we were... But I thought it would kill my mother if we didn't get married in a Catholic church. So actually, we came down here and went to Father Fogarty. And although John is a baptized Catholic but non-practicing, and I was a baptized Catholic but non-practicing...
Yes. Well, we used to call fallen away.
Yes, fallen.
fallen
by the
away.
Wayside. They were only too delighted to marry us. I mean, Father Fogarty married us. Remember that priest here?
Oh, I think a lot of people will remember because he was here. He had a very long tenure as a pastor, and then he became Monsignor.
Oh.
I'm saying it like the Italian.
Yes.
Monsignor.
Yes, Monsignor.
And he kind of held sway as the pastor emeritus for many years.
Oh.
So I know that a lot of people will remember him.
Yes.
Well, what did he think of two actors arriving, or one set designer and one actress arriving from New York? I told you this story had romance and zipping around in your Ford.
Well, John had gone to the cathedral to get his dispensation. Oh, I had gone to the cathedral to get mine, to be married out of town. And we just thought it was so beautiful here, absolutely beautiful. And as a matter of fact, we both told Father Fogarty we'd like to get married out under the trees. And he didn't think that was such a good idea.
People have to realize Father Fogarty was of the old Irish school where you didn't do things that were romantic.
Yes.
You did them by the book.
That's right. And I met him, I told you. I met him 15 years later, and I was so glad to see him. And I just ran up to him and said, "Oh, Father Fogarty, you married me 15 years ago." And he looked at me and so dazed, and he said, "Well, now, what parish are you in now, my dear?"
Yes.
And I said, "Oh, I'm a Quaker now." And that really killed him. I mean, he just dropped my hand. And he did.
Oh.
And he said, "I never did give that married. I remember you now." He said, "You were the ones that wanted to get married out under the trees. I never did give that marriage much."
Yes. And how many years? How many years has it lasted?
Well, we were married in 1937, so I'm not very good at arithmetic, but you know, we're going to be having a 50th anniversary someday.
Uh-huh.
Someday. Yeah.
Isn't that great, though? I never did give it much. Well,
yes.
Anybody wanting to be married under the trees can't be too...
That's right. Can't be too sensible, right?
But you made your home here eventually then.
Eventually, we did. We were in New York, and then once we had children, it was that business again where you just felt that you should have some permanent place for children that wasn't in the city. And also, John is very interested in the land, and he's really a gardener as well as a designer. He just wanted to live in the country, and actually, I let him... I don't know why I did this. I think this was a terrible mistake, but I guess it really wasn't. But it seemed, logically, it seems a mistake. I wanted to do anything at that time to make him happy. And so here I was in New York with little children, and he came down to the country, bought a house without my ever seeing it, with my permission.
Mm-hmm.
I said, "Anything you'd like will be all right with me."
Oh,
but you see, when I saw it, and when we smelled all the pig manure in the fields behind the house, I just didn't like it at all.
That didn't remind you of Central Park West?
No. Oh, I had no idea what it was like to live in the country.
Yeah. Well, John became very famous later as a designer of barns and converter of barns into the most magnificent homes.
That's right.
He became very famous in the real estate business.
Yes.
After he left,
he was in television. He did the Perry Como show for many, many years, mm-hmm. and did a lot of television commercials. And I was really in the country by myself because he was working in New York.
Well, I was going to ask you how you managed with the children and with the career and with the two. You kept two homes.
Yes, we did for a while.
You
kept two homes, and made. Well, it just seemed to just take years and years to sort of resolve things. Sometimes I'd go back to the theater. And then, of course, the wonderful lifesaver for me, because I was so hungry to act all the time, was the Bucks County Playhouse was here. And that was really kind of a help to relief.
Yeah.
I don't know what I'm trying to say. It just helped me to ventilate my...
You were performing.
Yeah.
You were, and of course, with some very fine people who would come there in those days. The format, as we know, has changed now.
Yes.
And they're doing...
musicals.
Standard musicals.
Yeah.
And they're not... necessary professional people who I think a lot of them would like to be professional.
Yes.
And it's a good
and once in a while they do have a professional person come, I think, and join them every once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
But I have never done anything for the new
for
people
this group.
Yeah.
No.
And,
but the in the days that you were talking about, there were many of your colleagues from the theater world would be appearing.
Oh yes, would be appearing right here. Now there was an actress that used to come down here once in a while, Flo McGee, that played the monster child in Children's Hour, Lillian Hellman's play. I hadn't seen her for years, and she just came by on Sunday, over,
uh-huh.
and we had a lovely time.
Yeah.
But I knew her in New York, too.
Well, how are you managing to keep up your craft now?
Oh, that's a good question, because now I really love to perform. And I am terribly interested in reading poetry. So now I do go to the Delaware Music Club every year. I do something for them. And then a wonderful young poet that had wanted me to coach him in reading his own poetry, he was an English teacher over in one of the schools in New Jersey, in Flemington. So he asked me to go and speak and read poetry to his English class. And when I went there, they were very, very certainly not prepared to listen to any lady with gray hair reciting poetry. They were all slunk around in their seats. absolutely, this is not for me. So I right away started to read some poetry of Dorrie Prevan's about riding on my motorcycle, screaming at the night. And the next thing, you know, and the officers come by, and I did this. They were really a lyrics to songs, and they all sat up and just listened, because it was very, very, very close to what was really happening to them and how they felt inside. And then after that, I could read some Shakespeare sonnets. I could read some things of May Sarton's. Whatever I did after that, of course, I continued for a while, maybe for 10 or 10 more minutes, to just keep on reading these marvelous poetry that's really lyrics. And because they were so in their vernacular, they were able to accept it. And then they were able to accept me and do the other things, you see.
I think you probably hit upon another thing that has made your life and continues to make your life successful, and that is your willingness to keep up.
Oh, gosh, yes. Well, we have a grandson living with us. And if I didn't keep up, I wouldn't be here.
Built in classroom. Well, so many people who have had careers in the past, even people who haven't had remarkable careers like yours in the past, somehow tend to live in the past.
I can't stand that.
No.
You know, I really can't stand that. To live in the past.
Mm-hmm. It's very sad, isn't it?
Yes, it seems
people
like
you don't realize what's going on.
Yeah, you get fossilized. You just turn into a sort of, you know, frozen in the past. And that's all they want to talk about, the good old days. And I mean, I think the good days are any old day, anything that comes along. I must tell you something. Have you got time?
Oh, yes, we have time.
I mean, I can talk on like this and not interrupt your work.
Uh-huh, I love
You've
it.
You've got your work. I had a fascinating experience the other day. I was reading for the Delaware Music Club. They don't ever ask me what to read. Usually I'm trying to think of things that have to do with music. But this time, I take a long time reading and going over things that I think will be appropriate. But I found a wonderful thing that Martha Graham wrote about that ballet being the acrobats of God, and how you have to keep practice and, you know, really be able, once you know your craft, to take the risk, to take the jump, and to get out into sometimes the unknown things. But it requires an awful lot of discipline and everything afterwards. And then she says, she talks about dance as if it's music, like it's another kind of language, and that it has so much to do with the body, and how what the body is always telling you, just look to see where the trouble is or where the gaiety is. It just really shows in your body, you know. Then I thought, and then right on top of that, I read a poem about old people at the ballet, right on top of this marvelous thing of Martha Graham's, called Old Lovers at the Ballet, that remembered when they were young and they had all the litheness of their bodies, and now part of that was gone, but then they suddenly realized that their spirits were lighter and that they could take another leap, another kind of leap, where it was sort of transformation, that although they had all of this agility once, they had another kind of spiritual agility. Well, to sort of take them down to some...
Oh, how lovely. Yeah.
That was nice. Yeah.
And I know we have... Oh, the time is going by so quickly. And, well, we'll just have to get you back. I must share something with listeners. Maggie Root, I'm very proud to say, has been a friend of mine for some time, and we talked about... Well, you must come on the show and talk, and you must come on. Well, that was going on for several years.
Yes, yes.
Now I want to sign you up for a whole series. I want you here once a week. Let me remind people about Mainly Cuts and Colors, 152 West State Street. Hairstylist for the entire family. They have the kind of haircuts that grow out well, too. This is so important. Get a really good shape that's going to stay looking good between appointments. They're going to help you. If you get a permanent, for instance, they'll tell you exactly how to handle it so you look good. They teach people how to blow dry hair so that it comes out looking good because they say that this is their best advertisement. I think it's very wise. Everybody makes out on those kind of deals, right? Right. 152 West State Street. You need an appointment. Always there. 345-0722 is the number to call. They're open Tuesday through Saturday. They're even open late on Wednesday and Thursday nights. And remember, they're hairstylists for the whole family. Maggie, Ruth, Margaret, Mullen, we are out of time, but I'm going to promise everybody that I'll sign you up again before you get back to your husband, who's also taken up cooking. We forgot to mention. We were singing John Root's praises there. We forgot to mention he's a fantastic cook, too.
That's right. I must be quite a talker.
Well, I told you the story has everything. All it needs now is a good score. Oh, tomorrow on the program, Elizabeth Vogel will be my guest. She is the designer of the Ice Age exhibit at the Smithsonian. She's also an industrial designer, has had many fascinating experiences working around the world. I'm very anxious to hear about the Ice Age. It's something we don't get to talk about too often. How appropriate in this weather, too, huh? So please tune in. This is Joan Stack, and I thank you for listening.